this is Steve Marino sitting in for James Gilliland tonight for As You Wish talk show. James Gilliland is currently tied up tonight down at the Whole Life Expo in San Francisco. And he's sitting on a panel tonight that should be pretty interesting. There's a little bit of diversity there. And he's probably engaged right now in the middle of a little debate and discussion about the different aspects of ufology, which are many and varied, as we all know. I was on with James on the show here a few weekends ago, and tonight we don't have any guests lined up, but I thought I'd take advantage of this opportunity and let you, the audience, know a little bit about myself, since I may be co-hosting for James from time to time and taking care of his show when he's off on all his various speaking tours and such, and as well do a little plug-in for what I've discovered as an investigator, the lead investigator on this case file, over the years I've been involved. James isn't so readily able to do this as the host because he's involved in interviewing people, but there's very many aspects that are interesting in this case file. I think that will be worthy of this show that I'd like to share with you, the audience. I'm hoping to critique the interest not only of the many thousands of earnest spiritual seekers, but also the interest of potentially many academic and scientific type people that may be thinking and maybe are a little skeptical but are open-minded to these possibilities. The reason I say this is because as an investigator, we have developed over time aspects of these types of case files that do try to stay within the realm of science and scientific methodology. And it's difficult, though, because the paradigm of science is limited with respect to what's acceptable. However, I think there are aspects of the scientific method that can be used in these types of cases whereby we can log statistical realities of instances and such. As well, we have new technologies available to us in this day and age where we're able to do things that we normally wouldn't have been able to do in the past, not only technologically, but cost out of pocket also. Advanced technology has dropped way down as far as cost is concerned, and there are things that we can put our hands on now as investigators that we never could have afforded before unless we had a vast budget from a well-funded foundation. So, to give you a little background on myself, which I don't think we had the opportunity to do that in the other show. I've been involved in this field for over 20 years, 30 years. I say 20 to 30 years because there's a period of time when I was just recovering from my own near-death experience. My life experience is interesting in that prior to becoming an investigator and involved with the foundation that I formed, Psi Applications, I was what I would term also as an experiencer or a psychic, but more or less out of control psychic. I think a lot of people have experiences from a psychic level, spiritual level, and experience things and may even not really know how to interpret those things or be overwhelmed by it. And suddenly what becomes enhanced into that would be their own confabulation or fantasy of what these things that are very real may be. At any rate, I was one of those folks, and I had some pretty heavy experiences and evidently capabilities. Things would occur around me that were similar to a degree of the movie Powder and the there was another movie that was out, and so basically, you know, there was a lot of electronic phenomena that would occur around me. this was from the time I was young till I was about 20 years old. I would have experiences that were almost interdimensional in nature. I can say that now, having learned from the field as an investigator. Basically, though, I didn't have a normal life, I can tell you that. And when I was about 21, long story short, was sitting outside Travis Air Force Base, which I was living next to at the time, looking at the different jets coming in for landings and such. And I began to doubt my own experiences. I was real close to what almost seemed like a close encounter of the fifth kind, where I was actually going to be having real physical contact. A lot of strange things were happening, but yet not quite all the way. It's how the nature of the paranormal field is. And so in a kind of like a doubting depression that night, I decided to just go home and go to sleep. But it was more or less to sleep it off, but it was pedal to the metal, taking out my frustration in my car, which was a Roadrunner at the time. I had my dog with me at the time. It was a white German Shepherd, and I'm just going to go home and sleep it off and try and, you know, start over the next day. But unfortunately, as circumstances would have it, I hit an island by myself out in a rural area, and the car went end over end about 15 times. And the overall accident evolved into the car landing upside down and eventually exploding. As it was occurring, it was strange because my near-death experience would be different than most. In the process of that accident, it went in slow motion for me. I never left the vehicle, but in a process that only took maybe 3 seconds or 4 seconds, if even that, it seemed like it was a minute or two, where I actually engaged in a dialogue with what I'll refer to as the source, and claimed that I love my life, and please don't take my life, leave me intact in one piece physically, or do take me, I didn't want to come back, you know, crippled, but that basically I would never doubt these experiences again and would pursue this foundation that I had, this thought coming into my mind all the time. It was like telepathy of psi applications. I didn't even know what psi meant at the time, or how or why I would form a foundation, what I would do with it. But basically that I would just follow through with these things, and I would, you know, engage in my experiences, and I would fund it out of my own pocket. I would never doubt any of it again if I could just walk away from this surely death-ridden accident. So what happened is I was basically all of a sudden landed upside down, and I realized I was still aware and conscious, so I knew I wasn't dead. I looked over upside down at the door, and the door just slowly opened, and I dropped on my back, onto my back. I was flat already, and I crawled out partially. And as I looked up at the sky, I could not believe my eyes. I just lay there for a second because I was overwhelmed by the beauty of the stars that were up in the sky. I mean, it was just incredible for some reason. I just lay there for about 2 seconds and said, oh my God, I cannot believe how beautiful that is. And I just said, thank you, God. You know, and then I realized I need to get up, you know, see if I'm in one piece. And that's what I did. I was in pretty bad shape, but everything was still connected. Had a little glass sticking out of me. I was like, you know, I had some sprained legs and stuff, but as I saw I had all my facilities, I kind of looked up at this guy and I said, one more favor, God, please don't take my friend of 15 years, my closest companion, Koenig, who was my white German Shepherd, also gifted to me by spirit, another story. And so out crawls my dog and shakes himself off also and acts like I'm going to throw him a rock or something. He's excited. The car, you know, the wheels are spinning and there's like getting ready to explode. You can see the gas dripping onto the exhaust. And I looked up at the sky and I said, God, just please, one more favor. I said, just please get me the hell out of here. And all of a sudden this truck stops out of nowhere. And this guy tells me to jump in and off I'm running. And the car had exploded just as we peeled out of there. So the next day, the police, you know, came and and the fire department came, they took care of the vehicle, and everybody turned white as a ghost when they saw that I was supposedly the person in this vehicle. The next day I was in really bad shape, but I went to try and recover what I could from the vehicle. Then I understood why everybody was in such a state of shock, because I went into that state of shock when I saw this car was completely flattened out like a pancake, and anything that survived was burnt up in the fire. But basically the doors were crushed into the car, they never opened up. And anybody inside that car surely would have perished or been thrown out of the car. So I had to own the experience at that point. And so it began a new type of experience for me, because for the first time in my life, unlike most people that undergo a near-death experience, they become more spiritually enlightened or enhanced and begin to experience psychic experiences. I begin to have a normal life. My out-of-control psychic energy subsided, and all of a sudden I was just like a normal person. All these experiences, weather patterns, interdimensional experiences, electronic phenomena, everything just stopped. And I couldn't believe it. It was like a regular life. So I began over the years to embark upon forming the foundation as I had promised, because I really felt blessed to have survived that accident and have a new lease on life. And through the many years, I began in investigations and got a lot of publicity through the newspapers and stuff here locally, and it branched out from there. I got connected with the referred to as the satellite government. They were tracking me down, trying to recruit me, which we have a document on our site they gave me, and I eventually was allowed to publish this document with an anonymous author. It's called The Whole Enchilada. And it details out what the satellite government's about and the cover-up, corporations involved and that sort of thing. It can be accessed on our website, psiapplications.com, in the hot links section there, the whole enchilada document. As time went on, many, many years, I began to acquire case files that were involved with contactees that seem to have ongoing current activity happening. And I begin to realize that the reason I was so easily connected to these types of case files and got along so well with these types of people was because it was what I was formerly before my near-death experience. So what I began to have within my possession was this bifold capacity of understanding and, being able to reach out to these types of people and work these case files, but to also have feeling and empathy with these people. But I still approached it with a discerning aspect. And there was some situations where way back in time, I think it was back in the 80s, there was, for instance, one fellow by the name of Sheldon Neidel, which some of you may know. He was a up-and-coming contactee that claimed to be connected to a galactic confederation and such. He was one of the first ones that I had hooked up with, and it ended up that I had done a test with him that ended up showing that this fellow was really not all he was saying he was. Basically, his girlfriend at the time asked to speak to me in her alien tongue. She was a walking spirit, supposedly. I was allowed to record it, and I conducted a survey of the galaxy with her, where she explained and answered many questions I asked. Later, probably about a month later, I was co-hosting for UFOs Tonight on cable network. We submitted a test to Sheldon. I told him that if I was to play two or three excerpts from this tape, where you could only hear her talking in her alien tongue, that he would be able to then translate for that, because he translated in the original recording. He would recite whatever it was she was saying in English, so he supposedly had this, knowledge. He agreed to do it, of course, because it wasn't, something he could deny, but he avoided the tests like the plague for many years, and so it became known as one of the only tests that kind of debunked Sheldon. Many people had ended up giving up all their possessions and following Sheldon blindly as he moved to Hawaii, and would continue to make pronouncements about this landing date of this alleged galactic confederation. So, my intent is never really to debunk any particular person, but if something is blatantly obvious, of course, in this field, it is exposed, because we're trying to ascertain where the real connections are and what the real reality is. We don't want those things to contaminate or, give a bad viewpoint on the real reality of these types of contacts. As I was led to, moving down the road, eventually there were several people in case files that I was connected to. The most predominant one, of course, as you all know, is James Gilliland, which I've been involved with now ever since 1999. And the other hottest one I'm involved with is an ongoing and current case file down in Peru, though I've never been down there. Somehow, you know, spirit guided me and let me know intuitively that I would be involved in this case file in Peru. Over the years, it began to transpire where all this information would come to me from parties that weren't associated with each other regarding this case file. This involved a contact group that was connected to a rural contingent of a galactic confederation down in Peru. The name of the group was called Rama. And this is a Hispanic group mostly, but they're spread out throughout the entire world. The thing that's unprecedented about this case file is there's been, like, I think six or seven times since 1974 when this galactic group that they're dealing with or in contact with actually did flyovers and demonstrations for the media even to film. And as it would occur throughout the years, a cover-up was imposed upon this, mostly imposed upon the sources that came back to America thinking their career was etched in stone with this footage they had. But the rest of the world, certain countries at least, were aware of these contacts. In fact, there was one journalist in Spain by the name of Benitez who wrote a book called SOS to Humanity. It's in Spanish. But it changed his life, and he became a world-renowned ufologist in the Hispanic community and has written several books since then regarding his experience having gone to Peru, having heard about this and experienced it himself. The thing that's most interesting about this is that in 1999 is the recent time when this Galactic Confederation did another flyover, was announced ahead of time by certain elements that were in contact with this group. It was announced publicly, and it indeed occurred within the month and time frame they said it did. In 1999, if anybody was to do a search of the UFO activity in Peru from January through, you know, I think July, they would see that there was a major wave of activity where the media would simply step out of their studios and film this live. It was beamed out to the entire Peruvian public. This is very interesting because what we have out of this situation in particular is a prototype now of a cross-section of humanity that has fared out very well being exposed to the reality of the ET phenomenon. Most Peruvians all know about this. I mean, these craft were very low flying over the capital of Lima, down in Cusco, daytime, evening. They always were sure to display characteristics that set them as definite unconventional objects known to us, such as flying very low, being stationary, or demonstrating you know, capacities that are beyond anything we have, flying at altitudes of 1,000, 2,000 feet. We have footage of this, and there's a lot of it that's still down there. And you can see, actually, the news insignia of the stations that had filmed it and broadcast it. The sad thing is about this particular case is that nobody knows about it anywhere in the entire world for some reason. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise, and I really maybe might take a risk here talking about this now, but it's not like it's a total secret. But I think a good idea behind Project Contact is that perhaps we get a message to this Galactic Confederation that they should do yet another demonstration and flyover that can be handled from the grassroots level up, basically filmed live and broadcast, announced ahead of time to the world throughout the university levels, that this would occur, and then filmed live by everybody and his brother with very cost-effective and readily available technology all the way down to our cell phones. So that there's just this massive compilation of evidence of this live flyover. And I would say, you know, probably in a staged process of maybe 6 events over a period of 12 months, that the feel for the fire of a critical mass component of the grassroots of this planet to know of this reality could be reached and acclimated to this reality. For those that may not know, the critical mass component is the key to this whole thing. What that is, basically, is in mass marketing and in the entrepreneurial corporate world. What that is 2% of a whole, basically. If you can reach 2% of a whole, that's 100%, it will exponentially gravitate on its own and reach the entire 100% whole. This is a proven marketing fact, I guess, from advertising. So we are employing this aspect of understanding in the guise of Project Contact, that basically if we can achieve a 2% acknowledgement or awareness of these flyovers over a 12-month period to the entire grassroots population of this planet, that then the entire planet will become aware of this reality. The unprecedented factor, and of course in this case, will be not only the retroactive documentation of previous flyovers and a 30-year track record going back with no negative experiences and nothing but good intent, but also the fact that it's going to occur in real time. So this has never happened before in ufology, to my knowledge. Most documentations and case files and research has only revealed incidents that have occurred in the past or may have occurred one time when there was good footage, but nothing that was ever repeatable for that period of time and nothing that could be duplicated then again. So this would be an interesting prospect. This fits very well also with my connection with James Gilliland and everything that he is doing with eSETI, because it is strange that it was actually at James Gilliland's booth in Laughlin, Nevada, that I was able to mysteriously connect with one of the main contact points to the Peru case file. And they eventually came up to his ranch, and the fellow that I had hooked up with, his name was Giorgio, and he was bilingual. He was a citizen of both countries, though born in Peru. He knew all the main contactees down in Peru. And so for a year, we endeavored to discuss the parameters of how Project Contact would work, and we also met up at James Ranch. And as well, I was able to meet with the main hierarchical group of the contact group of people, including the newest contactee, who has actually met physically with these beings and gone on board, named Ricardo Gonzalez, and discussed with them for over a three-hour recorded videotaped interview all these parameters and how it would work. They were very intrigued but wary, you know, about this, thinking even that I might be involved with the intelligence community or something and you know, this whole outlay of this plan. Of course, that was all worked out. But what's interesting, I think, is the James Gilliland connection, because up at his ranch, we have also a demonstration of a luminous light phenomenon that continuously displays, you know, indisputable characteristics that are showing a phenomenon exists. And we have all this video footage of it. We have all these witnesses. Seemingly this phenomenon is connected with a benevolence, because they did not begin to manifest there until James had moved up to this location and with his intent of forming the Self-Mastery Earth Institute. The most dynamic thing is that there was a previous flap of activity that wasn't even really, but maybe 5 years old, had subsided, but was very major back in, let's say, the 10 years prior to James moving up there, and it was documented by one of the main kingpin ufologists of all times, Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And there's a three-year scientific study that I had uncovered in doing an overview of this entire region and what this phenomenon may be that was starting to happen over James Ranch. This is all on our site. The entire documentary investigation is located in the hot link section of our site, referred to as Beckoning Contact. It was published on Jeff Rince's sighting site initially, and was basically a preview of the reality of James' case, because there were certain elements that were trying to debunk James, and because he had a spiritual message, you know. And I guess there's a lot of negative energy that does not want to have anything to do with something of a spiritual nature in this world. Why? I don't know. It's probably some old adages, some of the old lockdowns in the paradigm of our thinking, that spirit is something that has to be controlled by a church or a religion. I don't know. But I do know that I think there needs to be a new science developed, which would be basically the science of spirit, and it needs to be demystified, and we need to begin to embark upon an exploration of what our soul may consist of, and how it may work. It's something that we all will need to know eventually, and it is probably the most highly sought knowledge in the world. Many of us may not realize that till we're older or till we're in our deathbed, but eventually, no matter how much money or power any of us have, we will all at one day need to know that. So I think because of James Gilliland's near-death experience and how he was guided up there, and how James had abandoned all his material possessions and his previous way of being, moved up, was guided up to this location, not knowing anything about UFOs or really having an interest in them, that this connection shows that there's a benevolence there. As time has evolved, when I first met James before he went onto the speaking circuit, I began to teach him and show him how to use a camcorder to document this phenomenon and how to try and approach the investigative and the UFO community with these things, because I was afraid that he was going to be receiving a lot of negative flack from the spiritual message he believed existed through it. But, you know, I'll tell you, James is really something, because he has done such a stupendous job of just moving straight forward right through all the resistance, and has really gotten the message across. Where we're at currently with things is we're hoping, just like the project down in Peru, to possibly bring this thing forward to a point where we can actually do some real-time documentation, such as over in Norway. There was a project over there where they were documenting some luminous light phenomena. We hope to involve those folks also, and we're in the process of trying to set up a remote cam project where we will be able to monitor on a 24/7 basis the activity that exists around the sky there, by controlling this cam and recording the video off onto a VCR long distance, like from California. We're pretty close to doing this. We're still shy of a little bit of funding for this, but to further this, we're hoping also to demonstrate an interactivity of this phenomena by, at the furthest extent possibly, bringing this luminous light phenomenon or UFO phenomena down into the field to actually land, just as we were talking about down in the Peru venue. So this is interesting because these two things go in tandem together, of course. The difference is, down in Peru, there's probably a little more capability of these beings, advanced ETs, to do this without receiving massive resistance or having to enter into the third world war with the powers that be. Peru happens to be a very strategic location when you come to realize where they're located down there, with the Andes to one side and the ocean to the other. The military force, of course, of Peru is quite meager and is no threat at all. In fact, in the documentary site that will soon be released through SciApplications Project Contact on the Peru venue. There's an NSA document that shows a saucer landed in a Peruvian Air Force field back in time and allowed the Peruvian Air Force to launch their fighters and shoot missiles at it, which had no effect. They were just bounced off this force field. And then this craft took off and did a little dog play with these craft without firing back or trying to cause any damage. But it was just a demonstration of their superiority and basically that they should be left alone, which they've done, left them alone. So, you know, they operate basically unhampered down there. But because it's so predominant and it's known so well down there and through most of the Hispanic community in South America and many elements in the world are aware of this, the Peruvian Air Force set up a special study group to and announced this worldwide, actually. But they never alluded to the 99 flyovers. So it was like even the elements within the Peruvian military were trying to keep it under caps. But they did admit to there being a lot of UFO activity down there. So, you know, this is all good because even though the cover-up has been quite impactful worldwide, we have within our midst probably the only case file and an opportunity here with cooperation from the beings that are involved, which there is a multi-species group that are willing to cooperate and show themselves to the world, but only if we're able to acknowledge them and receive them. They have, believe it or not, from my research, an actual policy or directive of non-interference. So, and this becomes a little difficult to perceive, but, you know, when I thought about it, I began to realize, if you put it into perspective, it makes sense. In their perception, I believe they have interpreted that basically we as a planet do not want to have anything to do with them. The reason I say this is because on many subsequent times they were willing to leave us alone, but they would show themselves one more time because their whole directive is to, if they can, raise awareness in humanity, and if we're to show an interest and a desire to get to know them and move in a positive fashion forward, they would then cooperate and share endless wonders with us and bring us into a galactic group where we would eventually have, believe it or not, heaven on Earth. I mean, they are based on Ganymede, which is a moon of Jupiter, and some other remote outposts where they've engineered the atmospheres and stuff and they've made it work. Plus, they exist in a time sequence that's out of our time sequence. So there's a lot of things that have been learned from this case file. They basically are in the solar system to mine or acquire cesium, which is a very rare element that we have here, and is, I guess, in massive quantities on Ganymede. They use this cesium for very important things within their cultures. And cesium is an element that, to explain it, is used in photoelectric light technology. And certain elements of cesium are radioactive. But supposedly, this is one of their reasons for being here within the solar system. And this is a group of, like, I think, upwards of 44 different species of beings from different planets that work in coordination with each other. And they've been here for quite a while in the solar system. Most recently, though, within the past 40 years or so, they have begun to coordinate and work with certain groups of people that they have selected. Now, this hasn't only been the Rama group of people, because I'm sure there's some out there that are listening to this that are knowledgeable and aware of Rama, and some may even have a misnomer in their head that this was a cult group or a group that was not thought of too highly, but we can't allow those types of thoughts to stop us from seeing the truth of such case files, because There's the human psychological factor that can often contaminate our true discernment through such issues. But what's interesting to note in this Peru case file is that there were other people as well that weren't associated with Brahma. In Colombia, there was an engineer who was thought of very highly from the scientific and academic community, who was made contact with by this group, and several other people that we've located. So we have this cooperation of information that is basically the same throughout, and that's how we're able to determine the reality of the information we receive from the contactees who are in direct contact with certain beings. Like I said, on several occasions, these craft actually landed and beings got out and met people and took them into a energy field where they were able to basically experience the ships, and also a couple were actually brought up to Ganymede to see the Council of 12 and the Crystal City and several other cities that live there. As well, there's a hidden city in the jungles of Peru where the Incans escaped to when the Spanish came and invaded way back in time. And it's known as the Hidden City of Gold, or El Dorado, it's sometimes referred to. Paititi has another reference. There is a base that's close by that's called the Blue Base, where the Confederation basically works out of. And as well, there's a base off the coast that's well documented, referred to as a submarine base for a ufology base. You know, I this is really kind of like probably the first time this has been kind of publicly discussed on the, from my end on Project Contact and with a lot of this information, but it's out there. It's just that a lot of people haven't really moved forward with it. I have to admit that a lot of elements in that case file are so far out, they're hard to believe, but I have worked over the 15 years to investigate every aspect of it, even what's referred to as a Great White Brotherhood, which is a spiritual group that takes in all races. The nomenclature of Great White Brotherhood refers to a white veil of spiritual energy that exists. Well, we've actually found a human counterpart to this that is a liaison point down in Peru who has been, he was an older guy who gave up all his businesses. He was taken in by this group and appointed to be the liaison point for the public to connect with. It changed his life forever, and this is a new development, really, found here within the past couple months. So we're connected to this fellow, and we're developing that aspect of things. But what's amazing for those that are probably wondering right now is it is true, this Great White Brotherhood that they refer to down in Peru without any knowledge of anything else on the GWB have its secondary location or base of operations as Mount Shasta in California, which is incredible to me because, as many may know out there, there's a whole deal with Shasta that involves many people who have experienced illuminated beings up there. Going back to a fellow by the name of Guy Ballard in the 30s, who formed the whole I Am Foundation movement, and several others. Of course, all of these have branched off into their own little segues and probably would be at odds with each other, really, in this day and age. As I know for a fact, I went into the offices of the I Am Foundation up at Shasta to discuss with the head folks about this case file in Peru to let them know what I've learned and discovered, and they were very resistant to it because, it is just a thing that goes on with religion and organized groups of spirituality, and it must remain, you know, flexible and open, open-ended, because there's always new discoveries and new understandings, you know, and most of these types of groups and religions are closed, you know, where they're at. We hope to create, through a United Religions initiative, in a way, a more connected desire to discover truth. And this can be done through a realization that, you know, many of the things that all religions are founded on could be basically misinterpretations or fallacies through the antiquities of time, and also through holding back of the truth, which we now would have access to as a group. And if we can show this through a tree of truth, I think it's possible that all religions will be open-minded then about, as long as all are allowed to retain their indigenous understandings and heritage, and voluntarily they can come forward to a point, a united point as one, to learn the new truths that, as they relate to each religion, knowing we all had common roots at one time. As a process, you know, we would all have to let go of hatred, prejudice, and such, and, predetermined dispositions of our thoughts and other groups. But I can tell you, I think that also would occur, that once awareness became implanted solidly within humanity, that there was really other existences of life and a vast, infinite intelligence beyond our wildest imagination that truly was there amongst the stars, and one part of that was even here now to help us move forward. If we really all knew that as a species, as a group, I think all of us would begin to change, even the Saddam Husseins of the world. And I think that there would be no reason for us then to have these hatreds and these ideas based in the antiquities of our former understanding of what God or spirit or what, existence is. And so I'm hoping that through something like Project Contact, maybe there can be a turnaround. Maybe there can be a beginning point where the grassroots of humanity at least will know, and despite, the tamperings of the higher aspects of our governments and academic institutions to maybe keep that down, to control it, they won't be able to. Up to this point in time, I've seen many attempts of disclosure, as it might be referred to, potentially occurring at a level that would be considered maybe higher from a government arena, and hopefully to then filter down to the population or the grassroots. Of course, this has never occurred and never will, but the other unprecedented aspect of Project Contact, both up at James Gilliland and in the Peru initiative, is this would be brought about and instituted at a grassroots level. And if anybody's ever used their barbecue and they fired up their charcoal, if we're environmentally conscious, we hopefully use this new way they have of doing it, where it's a cylinder, and you put all your coals into the cylinder, and you just take like one piece of paper, you ball it up, and you put it in the bottom, and in the bottom there's these holes, and you light that paper, and lo and behold, before you know it, the whole entire cylinder of coal within 3 minutes is burning away. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of symbolism here, because as we all know, within meditation, there's also a phenomenon known as the Kundalini rising. And what we have here is this conceptualization in Project Contact from the grassroots up. Once this information is embedded, it will rise up, and nothing can prevent it, because it can never be taken away. And the acknowledgement of it and its reality will be at that level. It will not have to come from the top down. It will rise up exponentially and to the entire 100%. So this is something that would be interesting, because if we were to tap into the grassroots level at a university undergraduate level, let's say, throughout the entire world, we could achieve this. Now, the other interesting aspect of this is that none of this would be possible unless we had the power of the internet that has been gifted to us. And we do have that, because without it, this would not even be possible. But yet any of us can sit here right at the comfort of our own house, and we can touch the world. And we're capable of participating in something quite dynamic and something that is very powerful that was never available to the grassroots before. It was only available to the powers that be, the press, that sort of thing. Such as this entire system of the BBS radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS radio. The coverage they give of all of the various aspects of spirituality and these expanded aspects of our being is the very thing that is so powerful and can make the difference in us achieving a reaching of the critical mass component of the grassroots of all humanity. The trick is that we all, you know, live up to this cause and begin to utilize these capabilities for the betterment of ourselves. In other words, there's two things I think that are most predominant within the internet, and one of those is pornography, and the other one is UFO research. It doesn't really take you know, a PhD to figure out which one has the higher aspect, but I would have to say that those people who are probably sucked into the energy of pornography, probably just as those who are involved in negativity and military and hatred, are only doing so because they have nothing more they can look toward that can raise their consciousness and give hope. So with something like this, where there's a new reality, a new awareness, a new awakening, it's entirely possible for this to happen. And this is what we're shooting for and what James is shooting for. What I hope to bring forward a little bit more is you may hear from me from time to time. I would say maybe within the next year or so, I hope to bring forward some amazing things where people will be able to actually see the footage that was shot down there in Peru as actually being able to know or participate in a future event also that may occur. So if there's any of you out there that are listening to this and, you know, would like to call in, there's 10 minutes left, feel free to, otherwise I'll continue here, but I can tell you that one of the things that would begin to happen here, this is a great grand opportunity for science, because I can tell you that the things that we're learning about in this case file envelops science beyond your wildest dreams. It's obvious to me that science should not contain itself within its established paradigm. If we were ever to learn from the past, we would know that there's been many, many times in the past when scientists had discovered new things and were condemned for it, and unfortunately, even within their lifetime, they died being condemned, but after their lifetime, these became the new technologies and the new sciences that we live with. I believe that there are new sets of conditions and realities that may exist beyond certain parameters of our physical reality. And so there will be new, forever expanding discoveries here, and we need to be open to this. That is exactly what science is for. And there should be no reason really why the development of our spiritual understanding and the ability to work with it should also become a science, as well as respected from a very high perspective. You know, the world definitely is not all black and white and physical. As we all know, the atomic structure of everything we look at is basically empty space and is only conformulated into the concept we have allowed it to remain in. So there will be a great debate in this world once there is a physical element that displays its connection to this reality. That's why the message I put out forward to this Galactic Confederation is that we are all waiting and we are all ready to awaken and to take this information in as a grassroots population, a united planet. I believe within all our hearts that at the grassroots level, we all want the same thing and would all step up to the cause to do the right things. There would be a lot of sacrifice and a lot of changes that would have to happen to institutions, economic, government, you name it. But unless we make those changes and have something positive to work toward as a united world, the alternative is very dim, because if we continue down the path we're headed down now, there will be an expiration of all our environmental systems that's beginning to occur one by one right now. this will begin to kaleidoscope on down the line with everything and eventually take its toll on humanity. And it may take 100 years. It won't be like lights out. It'll be a slow burn. But eventually humanity will expire. And from a very high cause, these groups will just let that happen because we've got to evolve on our own. They will not totally prevent or force themselves upon us. We still have time on our hands, though, and we can do this amazingly by or before the year 2012, I believe. It all points to that, and that's what we're hoping to achieve. So that's the whole story you have it here. The process involved in this is a long and hard one, and both groups, such as Psi Applications and James Gilliland's eSETI and Self Mastery Earth Institute, need support because at this point we're like the pioneers that came into America way back in time in uncharted territory, totally by ourselves, carving a path at our risk, you know, out of our pocket, unfortunately. But I know that that will change also. I've always worked, and I know James has, moving forward in this, to not try and achieve fame or fortune in the process or get swept up into that whole thing, but to achieve the goal of actually accomplishing it. And but we're both at a point, I think, now where we realize that money is not an evil thing. It has to be viewed as a tool that can be used for the positive. And so we hope, as we unveil more of this, that we will have some private philanthropists that will be more than generous to support the cause. Mostly what we need is the ability to make a living while we're doing this. As we become more involved, it's going to require a full-time effort to stay at the spearhead and keep this network together. For myself, I hope Project Contact will become a joint coalition globally, sit on many servers, and have ownership ran by that coalition group. It's going to take a year to get to that point, and I'm going to have to be involved at that point full-time plus. So I'm hoping to be able to achieve that. The plans and the layout for that are continuously being put together. As a part of that, I hope that James has done well tonight and in his panel down in San Francisco, and I'm glad that he was able to take a trip on the road there. He stopped by my place down here in Fairfield, California, and we visited for a while. It was the first time I saw him physically in about 3 or 4 years, even though every day we feel like we've seen each other on a spiritual level. We always stay connected, so it was very interesting. I'm looking forward to going up there in about a month and making a few expeditions up there this year to try and set up the parameters of Project Contact, like we were talking about, some interactivity with the lights and some communication mechanisms we are going to try and use, as well as setting up the parameters for the remote cam project. So I think I'm just about out of time here, folks, coming close to it. I wish you all well. If any of you want to provide some feedback, feel free to contact me. My contact information is on psiapplications.com, and I will look forward to any feedback you may have. And on James Gilliland's behalf, and for As You Wish Talk Show, I would like to say goodbye to you. And looking forward to co-hosting and working on the show in the future. So thank you very much, folks. Take care.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.